Hello, you are listening to the Fortune Geek Heroes podcast. Remember, for more awesome and to see previews of our upcoming projects, go and visit fortunebooksandcomics.com. Okay, so welcome to the Fortune Geek Heroes podcast. I am Carl Smith. I'm joined by Andrew Brown.
As always.
As always. And our special guest this week is Joey Groh.
Hello. How's it going?
That was awkward. Joey Groh. I was going to call you Joe Groh, but it made me laugh.
Either way, we'll go with Joe or Joey. It's...
Ooh, I'm going to keep switching, I think, Joe and Joey.
Right, well, add a little bit of flavour to the podcast.
Yeah,
I'll keep it interesting. I'll answer differently depending on which way you ask.
There we are, see. So you keep the podcast fresh. There's all sorts. So, yeah, so what do you want to talk about first, guys?
First thing is the death of the family arc in Batman. The first issue came out, as it were. Okay, and it's really good.
Okay.
Like, it's really good. I don't know why I really want to... I'm really annoyed I have to wait a month for the next one.
You've really explained this well, Andrew.
Yeah. I've assumed, you know, seeing as everybody here is comic book fans, that we've all read the comic book.
Have you read that one, Joey?
Have you read that one, Joey?
I am only in the first trade of Batman. That's how far I made it, so I'm not there yet.
Okay, in the death of the family, it's the return of the Joker. Like, his big, massive return after getting his face cut off by the Dollmaker.
It's pretty kick-ass, actually.
Yeah, he's...
It's like extremely for the Joker. He pins his face to the wall.
Yeah, it's a little bit weird.
Yeah, I've seen it everywhere online. It's hard to avoid spoilers for something like that.
Can imagine.
Yeah.
I mean, Joker returning is probably big news, right? Everyone was Joker.
He works in any story he's in.
Only because of how crazy he is. You don't need a backstory with Joker. You don't even need, like, a motive. You got to just throw Joker in. He fits in everywhere.
You know, carry on, Jay.
Well, I was just going to say that the force of nature approach does seem to work for him.
Yeah. It's one of those characters. How long has he been in comic books for? Rough estimate, about 30 years maybe?
I can't remember his first appearance.
No, because he was in the Adam West TV series, so he's got to be at least...
Was that his first appearance?
He's not in his first appearance. His first appearance was in the comic book.
Obviously.
Yeah, at least the 40s, yeah.
Exactly, which means... 40s. And he's one of the oldest characters that has no definitive backstory.
What's the backstory in the actual Batman films? Like the old ones?
No, it's the same as The Killing Joke. He changed his backstory every now and again, every time he told the story.
Yeah, I know, but there did used to be a generic backstory for Joker, where he falls in like a...
Yeah, he was the Red Hood,
yeah. Wasn't he part of, like, a crime syndicate called the Red Hood?
No, he was, the crime syndicate called the Red Hood had a guy who just dressed up in the Red Hood outfit, to basically just show...
Okay.
Just show. And so during his first ever crime as this Red Hood, he got dropped in the vat of acid and his face turned all bleachy and he went completely crazy.
So he wasn't crazy before that?
No, he was just an average, everyday person. And then he
just went completely
crazy. Which is one thing The Killing Joke actually did really well. It's much like this one. It's actually,
that is Alan Moore's, isn't it?
It really is explaining the Batman and Joker's, like, relationship. And it's not enemies anymore.
No, it's not enemies.
No.
They're very weird friends, I think. No, it is. It's one of those where none of them could kill each other.
No.
It's like Stockholm Syndrome. Superheroes and villains. The Joker couldn't kill Batman if he wanted to. He could kill everyone else. Anyone Batman's close to, but not Batman.
No.
There's too much sentimental attachment there.
You all buy more into the approach there, the flip side of the coin, each is the other, to the extreme.
Yeah, I think, right, I don't think there's anything else that demonstrates that more perfectly than the relationship between Batman and the Joker. I think they're the exact opposite of each other, and that's why it works really well.
Yeah. Well, there was a... Oh, I can't remember which... it was Batman Arkham Asylum, the comic book, where he went into Arkham for a bit. And in that one, it proved that Batman was just as insane as the Joker. It just happens that he did something constructive with his insanity.
Is...
See, the man dresses like a giant bat. I'm sorry.
There's some psychosis there.
There's obviously something... Something's not quite right there.
See, every other superhero could get over the death of their parents. Not Batman. But again, that's the only thing that drives Batman sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Really. My parents said they'd better go beat up a criminal. I have issues!
Yeah.
So this is one I should pick up, Death in the Family, continue on with getting the trades?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Death in the Family, yeah. It's Batman Volume 2, Issue 13.
Is it Volume 2?
Yeah, it's Volume 2, Issue 13.
Okay. I thought it was...
Sorry.
Bloody hell.
When I...
Don't need to get aggressive with that, Andrew.
Sorry, you're questioning my knowledge.
Question your knowledge.
But yeah, if you want to pick up Batman again, this is definitely the arc to do it.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking about going back to just the first one of the New 52 and just starting from scratch, really.
See, I've been thinking that. I want to do it for Aquaman, though.
Did he get a New 52?
Yeah.
Did they care that much about Aquaman?
He's pretty badass, actually, the New 52, from what I've understood.
I was in the comic shop yesterday, and my retailer was going on about how good Aquaman was and how much attention they were paying to him. I hadn't read it. I guess I hadn't been aware that that Aquaman was kind of front and center of the reboot.
Front and center? God, that's not the first time I put front and center for a reboot. DC's greatest. I've got a question about American comic book shops.
Sure.
What's your comic book shop like your local? Because we don't really have a local comic book shop, do we?
No, not really.
You have to go to where?
Oh, we have to go to like news agents and stuff to get all that comic books.
We have to get them offline. And any places that are basically just... We have a thing called Fortune Planet. Forbidden Planet here. And it's they've got like a store in every single city in England.
Which is one place.
It's not like the small mom and pop comic book stores that you usually got. Like the comic book guy shop from The Simpsons, sort of.
I've been in one of the London locations a couple of years ago. There was something nice and kind of, I don't know, not nostalgic, but something kind of fulfilling to go into Forbidden Planet and be able to pick up 2000 AD. As a kid, when you're growing up in a pre-internet age, you see something called Judge Dredd, and you don't know exactly what that is, but it looks kind of badass. And you see that there is something called a 2000 AD, which you also don't know what it is, but it also looks badass. And then just, you know, over time when you start to go, oh, I get it, it's this. But that first kind of hit as a kid, your imagination just explodes because it's from another country and it's this guy that looks like this and it sounds like it's the future. And how will I ever find out what happens? And now I'll be able to download it locally to my iPad.
Technology moves on. I remember the first time I ever saw Judge Dredd, it was on a friend's house. So up until like the age of probably 17, 18, something like that, I never went into a comic book shop. My comics never came from there. My friend's dad, he did something. I think he mail ordered them or something. But he got them over from America, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And he just had like stacks of comic books, like each one like Batman, Spider-Man, etc., etc. That's the first time I ever saw Judge Dredd. 2000 AD comics, yeah, first time.
Wow.
I only ever read comics from his collection.
See, Judge Dredd was the first... 2000 AD was the first comic series I regularly bought.
Really?
Yeah, it was... Because it was like... Well, it was in... I couldn't really get Marvel or DC readily available easily, but my local store did have 2000 AD, so I just had to... Just buy it and...
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
See, I think it was harder.
Only, it was only after I bought the Judge Dredd comic books that I realised how bad the Sylvester Stallone Judge Dredd film was.
Oh, God, that's one was terrible.
Yeah.
Have you all seen the new one? I haven't seen that yet.
Oh, God.
The Judge Dredd from the comic books has been perfectly adapted to the silver screen.
Carl Urban is such a badass Judge Dredd. Is Judge Dredd exactly how he should be?
Yeah, he's just like... The best part is like his like witty one-liners aren't witty. Or one-liners. Or even make sense, but they're just cool and you just go, I'll accept this. This is...
He was so badass in that film, though. I just couldn't get over it. When the guy got shot in the head, it was like, yeah, nothing's happened to me. Bam!
Oh, yeah, if you get the chance, definitely watch it.
Yeah, watch it. Honestly, it's really good.
Does everyone have an American accent, or do they have a British accent?
See, that's the thing. It's the...
See, I'm terrible at deciphering accents.
No, it's the standard Middle English accent that has no real accent. If that makes any sense?
Middle English.
No, you know what I mean. Because usually when somebody puts on an accent, you can tell which accent they're putting on. When it's the Middle English accent, it doesn't really have one.
I can see where you're coming from with this.
So you can't tell that he's, like... Because in England, particularly, if you hear an American accent, you generally hear generally think they come from the South or something like that.
Right.
Whereas if you hear Middle English in a TV or film series from America, it's very much, they come from like New York or Boston or California or something.
You're just naming off places, aren't you? You got no plan for this, Andrew.
My mind went completely blank, by the way, when I tried to think of a single place in America. America's a big country. And
you covered it well.
I couldn't think of a single place.
You definitely got the main ones.
That's right, the ones you have to remember.
Exactly.
Can anyone do an accent? I can't. I'm terrible at accents. Absolutely.
Both of yours sound flawless to me. I think you're spot on.
Yeah! I was aiming for it. It will not surprise me if I can't do my own accent.
Back to your initial question, I actually live in a small town and work in another small town, and both of the stores here are fairly small town comic stores. I was in New York a couple of weeks ago for New York Comic Con, and I got to go to another universe, which was large and just so well stocked with everything. Here it's very much kind of a pre-order mentality a lot of times, where you've really got to pre-order if you want something that's not Marvel or DC. The shops do their best to get stuff in, but just because of budgetarily, they can't always choose something that's a little more off the beaten path outside of like an Image or a Dark Horse or a Boom, IDW.
That's the problem with indie comic makers. There's no real place to just go off and sell all their stuff. It has to gain a certain amount of popularity before you can push it. I think
is the good thing about that, the internet, really, isn't it?
It is.
Because with the internet...
If you've done something good, I do like to believe this, even though sometimes it probably isn't true, that if you do something good that is actually good, people will pick up on it.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, most of the time that isn't true, but, you know,
yeah.
You do get some people.
Yeah, it's the exception that proves the rule, effectively, isn't it, all the time?
It is.
Yeah, I completely forgot about that. I asked a question about comic book shops for a second there.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't really have comic book shops.
No.
It's a shame. It's harder to get into comics over in the UK. We're not a really big comic country, are we?
Not really.
You have a couple of large conventions, like I know Thought Bubble was recently going on. That always sounds like a great time, just based on the panels and the people I see attending.
Oh, yeah. Our comic conventions are brilliant. I've never been to anything like them, because I've probably never been to anything but them. But no, I went to London Super Comic Con this year as well. That's kind of new. That's only been running for the past 2 years now, I think. And that was really good. I enjoyed that. Stan Lee was there.
You know a comic book convention is big when Stan Lee turns up,
yeah. Half the people there didn't even care about like all the panels and shit like that. They just wanted to see Stan Lee. Stan Lee's a very hard man to look at. let me tell you that. Probably because all times he had to have like four bodyguards around him, and he was completely secluded in a booth, like with walls and stuff. You didn't actually know he was there.
You didn't mean that he was hard to look at based on the fact that he's an older gentleman. You meant that you couldn't see him.
That's my wordplay right there.
Do you want to know something? If I was Stan Lee, I'd demand that my bodyguards be dressed up as the Avengers. I'd just have to demand it for some reason. I don't know.
Right, okay, I was thinking about this. Probably too hard. But if you wanted to assassinate someone, a comic convention would probably be the best place to do it. Because you'd never be able to find a person who did it, will you?
I think you've got a plot. I think you figured out what your next series is.
Yeah, there we are. A murder mystery at a comic convention.
A whodunit.
Yeah, who did it? Was it Deadpool? No, because he's not actually Deadpool. He's just a guy dressed up in a suit.
Everyone's suspicious to me here. Everyone's suspicious.
I suspect the Klingons, as usual.
Can't go racist with this, God. All Klingons like up. I know it was one of you.
He was killed by a bat then.
My favourite moment in that whole convention is definitely going up to the table, because they lay out all the pictures of people that have taken on with Stan Lee, and all the pictures, all the people are different, etc., etc. But every single picture, Stan Lee has not moved an inch. He's always got the same smile, same glasses, and in the exact same pose. So you flick through all these pictures, and it's just him stationed. It's like a statue.
Those are weirdly fascinating.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's sad, really. If I was Stan Lee, I'd make a different pose for each person and make it a personalised experience. I wouldn't give them the same pose. You might as well just get a statue, really.
You've got to think about something. How many people does he meet a day?
True, but you could move like an inch. Like you could make it like, if they put all the photos together and like did a flip book, he'd be moving gradually. You'd be like in motion, but no one would know it until you put all these
photos together.
That'd be fantastic.
Oh, God.
That has to be well planned out, though. Yeah, totally do that. Make a flip book. Double everyone's pleasure.
So basically, every single picture you ever get taken is going to be of you in a different pose.
Well, not every single picture. That's a bit drastic. Maybe if I go to like a convention, every single picture there, in a specific place, at a specific time, will be motioned. People are like, why are you in that pose? I'm just getting into the next pose.
I really think you need to pitch him on the Avengers bodyguard situation. At least maybe Lou Ferrigno could walk around with him. He could have
that'd be fantastic.
some other people that
I would not fuck with Stan Lee. Series. I would not fuck with Stan Lee if Lou Ferrigno was there.
You know, in the first Hulk film, the two security guards that are coming out right at the start are Stan Lee and Lou Ferrigno.
That's right.
I knew it was Stan Lee. I did not know it was Lou Ferrigno until I watched it about.
Oh, the very first one, the terrible one.
It wasn't terrible. It just wasn't what people wanted.
Yeah, because it was terrible.
It wasn't terrible.
If it's not what people wanted, that means it's terrible.
No, it's not terrible. It wasn't a terrible film. I maintain that it was an all right film. It wasn't terrible. It wasn't bad. It was just okay, and people were disappointed with okay.
Oh, you're talking about the 2006 one, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not the 2008 one.
The very cartoony Hulk.
No, it was terrible. Don't know what you were watching.
The second one wasn't any better. Well,
no, I think it was marginally better. They really upped their game with that.
They didn't get Banner right. But granted, there's only one person that's got Banner right, and currently his name's Joss Whedon.
If anyone would be the person to do it.
I like the opening sequence of the second movie a lot. I thought the parts where he was trying to not be the Hulk were pretty well done.
It just I like how it completely bypasses in the Avengers, though. That's one thing people don't look at, because we can't criticize the Avengers because you get burned. But like the Hulk even Bruce Banner, just has complete control over the Hulk now. Well, no, he's still fearful of it, obviously. Yeah. He just has complete control. I'm always angry. But if you're angry, you turn into the Hulk, right? Yeah. But you're always angry. Shouldn't you always be the Hulk?
That's... No, because it's stress.
Yeah.
In the movie universe, it's stress, not anger. Anger just, for to say stress. If he's always angry.
It is anger.
Yeah, but you can always be angry and not be stressed.
I like that explanation. See, I like that explanation.
But it's not that. It's the
but your anger like makes stress.
It's the one thing I don't get. Right at the end, he does.
Is this spoilers?
Oh yeah, no geek has watched. They're not a single. Every single geek has watched.
You don't know. I mean,
I hope.
There could be one geek out there who avidly listens to this podcast.
Then he should watch the Avengers. One sec.
And he could be waiting until all of the Marvel films are done, so he can't raise any questions. And then he could be like, "Right, okay, I'm gonna sit at home in my cinema screening room because he's made that because he's a super geek, and I'm just gonna watch all the films back to back, all the way through the phase, not just phase one.
In chronological order as well. Basically, starts with Captain America.
Be one long film and it lasts like a week.
Now, is that going all the way back to something like a Howard the Duck, or are you just saying Avengers current continuity?
Just from the Avengers current.
Is he talking about the film that never existed? Howard the Duck didn't exist.
Howard the Duck?
No, he's not a comic book thing over here. But I've seen the film, and the film doesn't exist.
I've seen Howard the Duck comics over here.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No, don't watch the film.
It's not a popular comic book series, granted. But he is definitely over it.
Okay. I didn't know that. Probably because I haven't been looking high enough. Right. Probably because the film was horrible. Sorry. If we get onto the film, horrible.
This is what I don't get about Howard the Duck, is he actually exists in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
How does that happen?
I think he's from another dimension. I think that's the backstory.
Oh, is it?
Another universe.
Where everyone's a duck?
Yeah.
Where everyone's a duck.
Strange enough, wears a shirt, doesn't wear any pants.
Yeah. I find it suspicious on ducks. No, because you see it with Donald Duck all the time. When he comes out of the shower, he's got a bathrobe around his waist. That's suspicious. That's very suspicious. What's he doing in there?
Well, it requires him to wear a towel.
Yeah. Here's another thing I've noticed at Disney, right, is that all their main characters, except for Pluto the dog, because he's a dog, wear gloves. Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
All of them wear gloves. Goofy, Donald, the others.
Does Donald wear gloves?
Donald wears gloves.
Yeah, I'm thinking of Daffy. Daffy didn't.
No, Daffy didn't wear.
Daffy didn't wear gloves. He had actual wings. So he never flew anywhere.
It's because of Daffy, my perceptions on ducks have changed. Because when I was a kid, watching Daffy and seeing Daffy be a flightless bird, I naturally thought that ducks were flightless birds. And then I saw a duck fly off once, and I was like, oh shit, they could fly. I thought they could just like swim and shit.
Oh god.
Yeah, all wear gloves.
Suspicious.
There's something very suspicious. Walt Disney has something planned. Why do they wear gloves? Maybe not to leave any evidence. I'm just saying. Because you don't know. So I completely forgot about the topic I was going to talk about next.
It's like Yogi Bear's tie.
Well,
if you watch Yogi the Bear, his tie never moves, even though his head or body might.
Yeah.
And that's for animation purposes, so it could cut off. So his head could move and make animation cheaper.
But you just explained that. How's that suspicious?
Because it's suspicious. Yeah, I know. If you don't know, it's suspicious. But I know, so it's not suspicious. Does that make any sense to anybody?
No. I don't even know what the point you were trying to raise is there.
It wasn't one.
You were just stating facts.
Yeah, I was just stating facts.
And did you know Fred Flintstone lived in the Stone Age?
No, he didn't.
He did. It was the Paleolithic era, actually. Stone Age.
No, cavemen. Dinosaurs are rocking around.
Yeah.
It doesn't make it the Stone Age.
It doesn't make it the Stone Age.
There's no Tyrannosaurus Rexes, so it's not the Triassic period.
You're not doing this, are you? You're not trying to put science behind the Flintstones.
No, mainly because it's a creationism joke.
There's something seriously wrong here. I don't even know how I got off on this. We're just debating stuff now.
You think I do?
We started with the Joker and got to the logical conclusion.
That's a logical conclusion, that. Yeah, the Flintstones is set in the Paleolithic era, which is obviously the Stone Age. I'm no paleontologist, but if I saw the Flintstones, I'd probably be scared. Those guys had cars before we did. Don't you think that's strange?
Okay, we'll move on.
Hey, did you ever see that crossover where the Flintstones and the Jetsons swap lives? So the Flintstones are transported to the future, and the Jetsons like swap them and are transported to the Stone Age.
Yeah.
That was terrible.
I've not seen it. I remember seeing something about it, that it was a thing, but I never saw it. It's not good?
Yeah, no, don't watch it. Basically, the Jetsons don't do very well in the past.
No.
And the Flintstones not very well in the future. They just get really confused by everything. Like, what's this machine? That's a computer.
Do you know the weirdest parts about that actual thing? Is that the father, Jetson.
George
Jetson. When Elroy says, "What's that, Daddy?" he just goes, "Oh, that's grass. I learned that about in ancient history." Wait, what? You mean you have no grass on the planet?
No. It's toxic. Haven't you ever... There's a backstory to the Jetsons. Haven't you ever heard the There's a reason why all of their houses and stuff are elevated so far off the ground. It's because the Earth is actually blanketed with a poisonous fog. If you go down to the ground, you will die. Which is why they actually invented, like, hovercraft and stuff like that to get around. Why everything's in a dome, a glass dome. Well, the hovercrafts are in glass domes, so the fog doesn't seep in and kill everyone.
Nobody can see my face, but I've got the most perplexing just look
on
my face.
That's actually the backstory to the Jetsons.
That's rather dark for a children's TV show.
Well, yeah, but they've got to have... They had their reasons why it was elevated above ground and stuff.
This is quite obviously...
It's not set in space, is it? Haven't you ever seen, like, the beginning? Where and you see, like, the high school and stuff. It's like... It's on a pole, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly the reason, because there's a poisonous fog that's engulfed the planet.
I just thought they'd have done a different planet that didn't have a ground.
No. That's Earth. That's Earth in the future.
No.
I think it's actually nuclear fallout that's caused that. I'm not sure, though.
Well, the Jetsons also got really dark for me.
All cartoons are dark. All cartoons have a weird-looking backstory. Like,
Adventure Time really does have a weird backstory.
See, I was just thinking Adventure Time, because that does have a backstory, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's because the Mushroom Wars, or the Nuclear Apocalypse, however you want to call it.
The Smurfs came from Europe, right? That's French, maybe?
Yeah, they came from Belgium.
Belgium.
Yes.
We had
Belgium,
a guy who wants to catch and eat small blue people.
Did he want to eat them? I thought he wanted to turn them into gold.
Is that what he wanted?
I thought he was using them for, like, magic power. I thought he was, like, a great wizard, wasn't he?
Yeah, he wanted to catch the Smurfs, turn them into gold, if I remember correctly.
No, not turn them into gold. He wanted to use them as magical, like, elements, kind of thing, drain all the magic from them.
Mm.
Wow, okay. I always thought it was gold. I knew
Do you know what the wizard's name is?
Gargamel.
What about the cat?
Asriel?
Yeah.
It's one of those things. I knew. A part of me knew.
And if you're asking about Smurfs, you just start naming things like helpful, painter.
I love that about Smurfs. Is they're named after? They're not named after their job. They're given their name and then get a job. What's your name? I'm accountant Smurf. What are you doing in the paint and decorating section? Get the hell out. But I'm not very good with numbers. Get out!
That was another horrible film that they're making a sequel to.
Are they really making a sequel to it? Like the live action one are you talking
about?
Yeah. Oh, wow.
God awful.
Is there any films you do like, Andrew?
I'm quite looking forward to The Hobbit.
Oh yeah, that's out this month, isn't it?
Out next week.
I need to read the book in preparation.
I've taken the day off to watch it.
Nice.
How many are those? There are two Hobbit movies, or they're breaking it into
there's
three?
Been, they're breaking it up into three because Peter Jackson got halfway through filming the first film and went, I'm going to need an extra film.
Actually, no, he was halfway through building his money for money and realised, damn, I'm not going to have enough for my East Tower. So now he needs to do another film so he can build the East Tower on his money for.
I'm imagining the money for is true scale.
Oh yeah, true scale. It's like the size of a house.
I thought I was imagining the size of a castle, actually.
Have you all seen the piece they made for the New Zealand airline?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I haven't seen it. What's that?
It's basically they're going on the film for the... No, you explain it, Joey. Actually, we've been talking a lot.
Well, it's, you know, you get on a plane and you get the safety video and what to expect, and it's usually fairly dry, or they try to show the CEO in good standing and give you a lot of plane shots and show the mighty fleet, and here's what we do, and now you're going to hear something about oxygen masks. And in the case of the video for, I want to say it's Air New Zealand, they have it populated with people from films you might have seen involving Middle Earth. It's very charming. I like it. It's really, really, really well executed. It's a lot of fun.
So what kind of stuff we talk about here? What's on it?
I don't know why, but I've just imagined like Gothmog or like a really weird orc just giving you an explanation in like a complete...
And your exits are here and here.
Smeagol giving.
It's very much that. Yeah.
If you look to the left, you will see those passages also known as the fire exits. If you look to your right, there is the wing of the plan.
Got him.
Yeah, that's currently all I've got running through my head, just Gollum giving it.
Smeagol does not condone smoking on the air.
Not that far off. Very, very on point. Yeah, it's very much that. Worth a watch.
That seems, I don't know, I suppose it's just in good fun really, isn't it?
Yeah.
All they do is have fun. I was watching some of the behind-the-scenes stuff, like Peter Jackson stuff, and he's taking you through like, all these things and stuff. And it's like, yeah, welcome back to Riverdale. Oh, it's magnificent. And then he shows you that he walks into the set, and he just walks, he sits down in the middle of this like massive city kind of landscape kind of thing. He's like, yeah, it's so magical. And then the camera pans over, and like half of the fucking city's missing. He just walks up, like, yeah, that's so magical over here.
We saw that, gosh, what was it, 2001? When did those films come out? 2002?
Yeah, 2001, 2002, and 2003. They came really quickly after one.
Year after each other?
Yeah.
No way.
He's like The Hobbit, he made all three at the same time.
Same time, of course, yeah.
He made all three at the same time.
I had just started dating my wife when those movies were coming out, and I had seen, Fellowship of the Ring is the first one. I'd seen Fellowship of the Ring with friends and was visiting her family over Christmas. And the question was, what are we going to go see? Joey's seen Lord of the Rings. And I said, yeah, it's great. It's really well done. I'm not a huge fan of the books. I've read The Hobbit. I have not read further. I know that people are angrily shaking their fist at me. But it's great movie. Really enjoyed it. They hated it. Mom, sister-in-law, brother-in-law, who's also somebody that you would think would be more into the sci-fi fantasy side of things, video game player, you know, love genre stuff, just came out the other side, and for years it was the running joke every Christmas, Lord of the Rings.
Wow. Lord of the Rings was like, and they, granted it took them 3 years for the Oscar people to go, we should probably give these guys something.
That's only because the geeks were like, yeah, if you don't, we'll fucking buy it. I swear, I'll slap this car a little bit.
Yeah,
we're gonna really cause some destruction, but we don't want to get arrested, so we're gonna cause like light destruction. I'm littering. Take that, society.
But yeah, those are the trilogies of film that really cemented that this is the geek age of cinema.
Yeah,
it really
that was actually pretty much started off. Really,
yeah.
Like properly.
Yeah, properly.
That and Harry Potter. And Harry Potter also changed how the last movie is made, where you get two parts of one book.
Yeah, that's because Warner Brothers knew. I think Warner Brothers knew that you needed to have that as a 4-hour film, but they couldn't afford it, so that's why they had to do two.
I disagree. I think it was because their money for. needed an extra East Tower.
Another wing.
Another wing. They need a barracks in that thing, man. If they don't defend themselves, they'll never fight off Peter Jackson.
You know, I've been going over Peter Jackson's filmography in my head, and he's never done a bad film yet.
Right, okay, so let's go through it. Lord of the Rings, clearly.
Yeah.
King Kong.
Yeah. Braindead,
yeah. King Kong wasn't a bad movie, was it?
No, it was lovely. I really liked it.
It wasn't the best film I've ever seen, but you know what? I could definitely watch it again and again.
Yeah, it's not... There are certain films you watch and you just go, yep, seen that. Never watching that again. King Kong, you're just like, oh, it's on TV. I've got an hour.
I've heard not good things about... I'm blanking on the title. Lovely Bones.
Oh, yeah.
Even then, that's not... It's still not bad. It's bad for Peter Jackson, but bad for Peter Jackson's still good.
It's just that he's one of those type of guys, isn't he?
Yeah.
Plus, he likes to go on. He does waffle a lot. And he's
always in his films as well.
Is he?
Yeah, he always plays a part in his films.
What was he in Lord of the Rings, then? Example.
He played an Uruk-hai.
Okay. He's not
a major character in...
It's just something completely far from the foreground. No one would ever guess it. He just wants to be there.
Well, he was actually front and centre with a big, massive beard and big pirate outfit as a corsair in the third one.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
No,
I have to look out for this. I'll watch it.
You won't recognise it as Peter Jackson purely because he's got the beard.
I will, because I'll go on the internet and say, which part does Peter Jackson, and then I'll watch out for the scene.
But yeah, he's always in every single one of his films.
He's a gunner or a fighter pilot in King Kong, I remember that.
Yeah, he is, actually, yeah.
I don't know that. I was unaware of this. So yeah. Just now.
Yeah, he's in every single one of his films.
The film of his, I think, is not cult. It doesn't have the cult following, and it certainly doesn't have the pop culture tonnage of Lord of the Rings, is The Frighteners. I think that's a great movie. I feel like it's underappreciated.
I haven't seen The Frighteners in a very long time, actually. Thank you for saying that. That's actually a film. Download it. It's pretty good. It is. Yeah, it's really good.
It's one of the last Michael J. Fox starring roles, too.
Oh, was it? Michael J. Fox? No way.
Yeah.
I never knew they did a film together.
No, we learn something new every day.
I certainly do.
It's worth a look. I like that film a lot. It's got a great supporting cast, and you know, per Peter Jackson, pretty great special effects.
So, yeah, it's...
I'll definitely give that a look.
One thing I do have to say about one minor point that's a problem with Peter Jackson is that he makes me wait too long to see the end of his... Granted, I can wait. It's for the end of The Hobbit.
Oh.
Why is he making me wait?
I can't believe I haven't even said this yet. I was at San Diego Comic-Con. I was there shooting some video for a friend of mine who had a couple panels, in addition to being there because of San Diego Comic-Con. And I got... late in the game, I was asked to go, so I didn't get a hotel near the convention center. My hotel was about 5 miles away, so I had two cameras with me and some other gear, which is pretty difficult to walk places. So
yeah,
another friend of mine had actually booked her room earlier and had a room in the Hard Rock. She and her family were staying there, so they let me leave my gear in their hotel room, which was right across the street from the convention center. So, you know, it's San Diego Comic-Con. You're literally elbow to elbow the entire time with random, you know, families, people in costume. Hey, there's a celebrity. So I'm standing by the elevator to go up to a room, and there's a woman in a very tasteful, not TNA kind of Witchblade costume. And, you know, you're just standing and waiting. Elevator opens, and about 12 people come out. Number two out the door is Martin Freeman.
And, no way.
Yeah, and it's there. You know, there's no opportunity to say hello or acknowledge. It's not that kind of people walking past you moment. And they just, the entourage keeps going. And then, like, number 13, 14 is Peter Jackson, walks past us. We get on the elevator and look at each other and go, gah.
Because both
recognized who that was and where they were going to do press, and or they'd just been doing press, and yeah, it was a really fun moment.
That must have been magical.
See, he said, "Sorry, McCullen wasn't there, was he?"
I don't know. I didn't see him on that elevator. If he was,
ah, Because if he was, then I can have a rough guess.
So that,
was...
that sounds like a big elevator. 15 people.
It was large. Yeah, that was... The Entertainment Weekly party was there. We kept seeing, like, hey, that's Terry O'Quinn from Lost with Vanessa Williams. It was just odd.
We really need to go to San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah, we should. We will one of these days. So how magical is San Diego Comic-Con for people who have not been?
I had not been. I'd been to New York before. It's the next one, I think, in terms of size. But it really does take you a little bit of time to figure out how to process it. And since I was there with a couple of goals, a couple of things that I was doing, it was kind of nice to have anchors. And I actually treated it not entirely as from 8 o'clock until midnight, I'm going to be at San Diego Comic-Con. That would actually be my first piece of advice, is get out of San Diego Comic-Con at pretty consistent intervals and go have lunch somewhere that's not San Diego Comic-Con, or go find a bench. You know, there's plenty to walk around and see just where you are. But, yeah, I mean, it's completely nuts. It's overwhelmingly large. It's a sea of humanity. It's a ton of fun. You can literally stand and people come off the elevator and you recognize them, and it's really cool. If you're there with friends, which I had a pretty good network of folks I knew there, you know, it's nice to have kind of that home base of people to talk to and, what have you seen? What have you done? And it's definitely a blast. It's exhausting and just it's very energizing at the same time.
What was it, because I know someone who's been to San Diego Comic-Con, and he described it to me as, he said he thought he had died and gone to Valhalla. It was too awesome. He thought he had died from shock as soon as he entered the door. I was like, could it really be that good? He's like, yeah, it really can. I was like, okay.
It's a marathon. It's something that you definitely need to think about how you tackle it, because it's, I think, just... Friday on was nuts. I actually didn't make it there until late Thursday night. I was supposed to have been there earlier in the day, but had a flight cancel, and it was just overwhelming, you know, in the morning. And by Saturday, it was, yeah, completely crazy.
That's one. It is practically one of the few places in the world where you can, basically, as long as you're a nerd or a geek or a fan of something, you can go there and just geek out on it, and no one will judge you.
So I think it's the same with any convention, really. I think you could go to any comic or film, etc., convention, and it's just, you fit in. No matter what you are, you just fit in.
Only in the big conventions, though. If you go for the smaller...
No, I've been to smaller conventions. Just lovely.
Yeah, no, but they're just general comic book and geek conventions. If you go for a more specialised convention, you will look out of place if you turn up in like a Batman outfit. It's a My Little Pony convention.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. That would probably look a little bit out of place.
You guys are just trying to think in terms of hours. I guess it wouldn't be as long to go to something like New York in terms of flight time. And, you know, that's a great con. I think we left Saturday this year. I didn't stay Saturday and Sunday, but Friday was already pretty packed. And they had changed up how Artist Alley worked. They moved it physically from the rest of the convention, which I heard folks complain about, and some folks say that it was great. It was like their own mini convention, so they were getting all the overflow and had, you know, an experience of their life in terms of books they sold and fans they got to meet, readers they got to meet. But just, you know, just that alone, just being able to wander a fairly clear Artist Alley that has all those people that are coming to New York Comic Con to be in Artist Alley was great to have in one place. And
yeah,
a little elbow to elbow, but for the most part, it was like a really healthy kind of walkthrough.
See, New York Comic Con's in Manhattan, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's on the west side of Manhattan. It's at the Javits Center.
All right, okay.
Yeah, it's second biggest.
Yeah, I know where it is.
I remember them... Because it's this year it started, isn't it?
What was the question?
New York Comic Con. It was this year it started, wasn't it? For New York Comic Con.
Years old now. It's at least 3 or 4.
Oh, yeah. Well, I know it's relatively new. I thought it started this year. Now, we've got one in London. I think it's every, like, May-ish time. It's called Kablam, the Kablam Comic Convention. You've heard of it, haven't you?
Sure.
No, I haven't.
haven't you?
No, I haven't.
It's supposed to be, and obviously this is where it fell, because it's been winning for like 3 years now. It's supposed to be London's answer to San Diego Comic Con.
Yeah,
they're trying to make it as big.
Yeah, that's not really possible.
Which is a shame.
Yeah.
I can't even remember what they had lined up for it either, like in terms of guests and panels, etc., etc.
Mm.
I did listen to Stan Lee give a panel once about the difference between selling comic books back when he was doing it, like in the 60s, 70s, to selling comic books now. So there's a tremendous amount of difference, because it's weird, because he said it was harder to sell comic books, but, oh, 1 second, so what do you say? I'm going to try and put some words now. No, he said it was harder to sell comic books, but comic books as a medium only came in one variety, so you could only sell them as one thing, as just comic books.
Yeah.
But nowadays, you can sell them in a whole variety of things. And it's, you know, easier.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier.
No.
I'm going to go with that. That's the point I'm making here. It was a lot harder back then. Because he said comic books back in his day, I imagine, they didn't have story. They were just for kids.
Yeah.
They were just action. Just make it as action-packed as possible. And they didn't really have any plot. It's just punching bad guys kind of thing.
Mm.
But Stan Lee wanted to do plot, and he introduced plot, and people really liked it and started
buying it. And
obviously, yeah, and that's where Marvel
came from. Now, when they're adults, people really should be saying, "No, you shouldn't be buying comic books." Screw you!
I wonder how many people told him that. Like when he was starting up, like, "You shouldn't be doing comic books. That's a stupid idea." Because especially back then, because back then comic books would be treated as like just
children,
just like for children,
no money. Look at him now.
Yeah, that's true. But he loves living in that mansion.
I find that people actually tell me to stop buying comic books.
Every
so often they're just like, no, I like comic books.
I don't see a problem with comic books. It's the same as any other. Same as any other thing, isn't it, really, like books and films, etc. Why can't you just enjoy comic books? I've never got that, by the way. I mean, no one has ever told me don't read comic books.
It is strange to think that somebody would tell you to stop that. It would be similar as stop listening to music or watching DVD sets.
See, there's the thing. My family isn't very big on the whole. I'm like one of the only geeks in my family, in my entire extended family. I'm one of the only geeks, and so they don't really understand it.
Everybody else is accountant Smurf.
Yeah, effectively, everybody else is like jocks or.
In fact, even you were accountant Smurf for a little while.
Yeah, I was an actual accountant.
Yeah, no, that's what I just said.
Still read my comic books. Or being an accountant.
Being an accountant. Because that's who I put the trust in. Seriously, no, that's probably who I'd put my trust in. You read comic books? Yeah. You're my accountant. Welcome aboard. I don't have any money, but you can deal with it now. Don't have any books either, so.
So, yeah, we just got. Don't know, too sure what I can pay you with. Peanuts? We got lots of
I'll pay you in comic books. That's clearly the answer there. God. Ooh, I've got a limited edition Spider-Man number one here.
You'd never sell that.
I'd never sell it, but I'd dangle it out the window at geeks. Do you think they'd die for it? I like to think some of them would. I just dangle a fishing rod.
Well, so basically, you just got this limited edition Spider-Man number one just dangling from a fishing rod. You just like, at San Diego Comic Con, or any Comic Con, just like sitting on top of a roof and just every so often just go, just pull it up every time.
Do that money trick. You put it in a limited edition case, whatever, and then you just put it on the floor, fishing wire, and you pull it back whenever someone's trying to grab it. Love that trick.
I think if you add that to the murder plot that you talked about earlier, make that your reality show, I think it would cover all the different genres.
That's how you get the victim into position for the assassination.
This is really elaborate. This is like the most elaborate murder ever. First, we have to go out and buy, like, how much is that thing worth now? The last time I checked, it was £8,000. So that's like, what, $12,000,
is it? Yeah, about that. Basically, this is pretty elaborate.
So you have to be rich before doing this murder thing.
Yeah.
That's clearly the point here.
And then you also have to be at a comic book convention. You have to, it's a lot of working parts.
Exactly. You got to buy the ticket for Sam. You got to buy the ticket for you, the guy, and hope that he goes.
The more confusing the plot, the easier it will be to get away with the murder. So if you confuse other people, then you get it.
Is that what the detectives will just kind of put up their hands? It's too complicated. I'm out.
It's too complicated. I mean, there's lots of like unsolved murders, isn't there? Why can't this be one of them?
See, there's the thing. Detectives would go that. Comic book nerds won't. Comic book would find the continuity in it.
Just before the detectives are going to go, yeah, we're going to put our hands up. We can't solve this murder. We're opening the floor. And like Sherlock Holmes, fucking the Doctor, all these Victorian figures will just step out and go, we're dealing with this.
So, you know, that'd be guys dressed in suits.
We need a motive.
That'd be guys dressed in outfits doing it.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I think it's Hawkeye. It's Hawkeye. Hawkeye did it, but it's West Coast Avengers Hawkeye. That's the one.
This is difficult.
It's Hawkeye with the Iron Man arm. Next to the Stan Lee comic booth.
It's confusing.
It's effectively Cluedo.
Here's our list of suspects. Well, we've got Iron Man. Batman. We've got Batman 2. Crazy. Paddington Bear. Now, he was a really suspicious motherfucker.
Wait, is he the detective or is he's a suspect?
He could be both.
Well, Paddington
technically, they're all suspects. The detectives can't trust each other, right? They can only trust themselves. If they didn't do it. There we are, see? It's a twist right there. What if the detective was actually the murderer?
It's getting more complicated by the minute.
It really... Which means he'll get away with it.
Oh, God. Anyway, seamless transition, by the way.
Transition to what?
I was going to start asking Joey about his comic book.
Okay, we can move on to that. Do you want to move on to that?
I don't know, because we were talking about comic books for a while, and I thought, try to find a seamless transition. And there wasn't one. So I forced one.
So you forced one.
I forced
Paddington Bear.
Paddington Bear. Paddington Bear.
What a weird segue.
I was hoping you were trying to...
Speaking of Paddington Bear, though, we've got a guy here trying to do a Kickstarter. Paddington Bear likes jam. His initials are PB. Kickstarter starts at KS.
It is a Kickstarter examining the life of Paddington Bear. It's imagining him from the Paleolithic to now. It's tracing the history of Paddington Bear and his family. No, it's a action adventure romance. It's a comic.
I really love the Paddington Bear.
Let's go back to Paddington Bear.
Can I invest in that one?
So there was a big bang.
See, you've got to make this up on the spot now.
No, the comic that we're doing is called Dry Seasons. It's a 4-issue miniseries. What's that?
Yeah, let's talk about Dry Seasons.
Yeah, okay. Not Paddington Bear.
I wish I had more Paddington Bear anecdotes. It's a 4-issue miniseries that we're looking to cover some of the funding through Kickstarter. It's set after the apocalypse, and two families have to come together and try to undo years of mistrust and hating each other to survive.
Yeah, because one owns like the water side of things, and the other owns, what was it?
Yeah, the other is more on the land that could be used to grow stuff.
Yeah, so they do kind of need to work together.
Yeah, yeah,
I like that. That's a really cool background to it, isn't it?
Yeah.
I hadn't seen it done. I thought that might be a fun route to take, something that's not exactly farming but has a little bit more farm to it. And there's an external threat that comes into play that both of them have to kind of snap to and see if they can't evolve a little bit, or everybody might get overrun.
Yeah. Ah, I like that. Is that a surprise? Do we have to get the comic to find out more about that?
What will happen? I don't know actually how much I've been spilling so far. The setup is simply we kind of open on the action of one of the groups is getting attacked by an external threat, and then they decide that, you know what, let's try to bury the hatchet, let's get together, get things moving with these other guys, and see if we can't at least establish a truce, at least start sharing resources, because if we don't, we're going to get overrun, everybody could die, and our resources will be taken. So let's see if we can make it work with the guys who we don't like, but we're pretty sure aren't just going to try to openly destroy us right now, and see if we can band together and move forward. And that's where the two protagonists meet. There's a meeting of the two families. They get together, and Anne and Paul, the two main characters, meet, and through kind of a lust, fall in love, or get to a point where they realize after they have met, and maybe make a, let's just say they might consider what happens a mistake, if they really do actually like the other person, and it kind of is told through a little bit more through their points of view of what's going on, what's happening, and we see if they, how they come out together at the end, or if they come out together at the end, or if everybody makes it out at the end.
I do really like this. I think it's a really cool story. Yeah. I mean, it's got everything you want. It's got romance, action, external forces.
Yeah.
Empires, zombies. It's full of everything.
It's all in there. We've got to read it. Yeah.
Which props to you, by the way. I find romance really hard to write for some reason.
Really?
And I don't know why. I've always thought romance would be harder to write than most of the genres.
It's you know, it's mixed in there. Like everything else, I wanted. It's not a romance comic. It's heavily about these two people figuring out, you know, do they love each other and why? And I think I'm supposed to hate you. And I'm a man child who hasn't had to really be in a relationship like this. And let's see what happens.
Yeah. Definitely. So you write the story, don't you? You don't draw it, you write it.
That's correct. The artist for Dry Seasons is Ryan Cody. He's actually based in Arizona, which is on the West Coast, and another state you can name if you're ever in need of a state to throw in there.
There we are, DC. It's helping.
Yeah, I know Las Vegas is in Arizona.
So what's the relationship there? Do you know him, or is it just, hey, draw my comic book?
I've been aware work for years. I'd seen different things over the years, and I followed him on DeviantArt. That's a great service if folks aren't aware of what DeviantArt is. You can find not just comics, but different types of illustration and film, and I believe there's also a lot of modeling and costuming. You know, it starts to get into really cool kind of niches of, I like to make weapons that are used in movies. You know, it's prop making. It's a whole mix of stuff. But I follow a bunch of comic book people that some I know and some I don't know, just to follow their work when they post it there. And he pretty frequently lets folks know when he's taking commissions. And I just contacted him a year ago, maybe over a year ago, and asked him if he had any interest. And at the time, he did. And I just didn't. It takes us long to make comics, apparently, when you're not making it your full-time job on my end. And contacted him again this year, and he had some time in the schedule, and we did a couple pages, and I decided to take it to Kickstarter and see what would happen.
Cool. That's
cool, man.
That actually covers everything. No, I really love the art style on this, actually. It looks fantastic.
No, thanks. He's great. And he's fast, and he's actually doing pencils and the colors, so he's doing everything.
He didn't do. I get the feeling though. He didn't do the front cover.
He did not do the front cover. That's actually the first piece I had commissioned before anything else. I'd seen this guy's work online, and he's a Brazilian-based artist. And just contacted him and said, "Hey, I'm thinking of doing a comic. If you were to do a cover, would you be interested?" And yeah, he was great to work with. I've been really lucky in that the people I've done comics with so far have been just not only talented, but super easy to work with and get along with.
Yeah, I mean, I love this cover. I mean, that's the first thing that I saw. So I showed it to Andrew. Here you go.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. Like that.
It's badass.
Yeah, it was really cool.
I thought, man, that looks so badass.
If I saw that in a comic book store, like as the front cover to a graphic novel, I'd probably go, Yeah, I'm going to buy that.
That's good to hear. Yeah, the guy's name is Gabriel, but his pen name is Ayuma, and he has a graphic novel coming out sometime early next year. I'm not sure if it's going to be an English language version, but he and I have talked in the last couple of weeks, and he's thinking about crowdsourcing something that'll be his next project. I know he's got some time in 2013, and yeah, he actually did another commission cover for a friend of mine, Rich Doak, had a comic called Gutter Magic, and he did a different style and a very different look, you know, still very him, but it's Rich's comic is actually really cool. It's kind of a magic is real. It's still happening. It's been around for a while. The world, you know, has influence from magic, and he did a great shot, establishing shot of one of the characters with it's hard to describe. I think it's guttermagic.com might get you there. But it's a building where the top of the building is floating. It's the Empire State Building separated from the rest of the bottom. And it's just sort of suspended in the air.
That's just pretty cool, yeah.
Yeah.
I can see that. Where magic already is. Yeah, it's quite cool. I have to write down that idea. Try and beat you to it. I'd never do that. What a terrible thing to do. So I do have a couple of questions for you, if you don't mind. If you've got the time. Sorry?
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. So where did you get the idea for this? I mean, Dry Seasons. I mean, it seems very influential by Shakespeare, you know, Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah, the genesis came, like a lot of stuff that seems to happen, either mowing the lawn or in the shower or running. And I lived in a pretty small town before we moved this past, we moved in 2011, and I was out running one day, and there were no sidewalks for the most part. So I had a road, ran down, you know, a lot of country roads, and there's a lot of farmland there, excuse me. And I saw a dilapidated barn and the silo, and just thought, you know, mushroom cloud. You just have that mushroom cloud behind the barn, and then wondered if anybody had told a story that had more of a farm setting, that was a post-apocalyptic story. And, you know, it's just from there it sits. And I think the original Word document I started was titled Mowers. I thought it was going to be a little different. You know, I just kept seeing large farm machinery kind of cobbled together, things that don't fit, you know, people using whatever resources they had to build farming equipment. And, you know, why is this a thing? You start to figure out plot and then realize that you don't really have a story. And then I just thought, well, what's the story here? Oh, it's people that have to work together. They're going to die. Well, why? Because somebody controls resources. Somebody controls other resources. And you just need to let things stew, and it forms into what it forms into. And I early on happened upon the Romeo and Juliet meets Mad Max as a tagline. And as much as I don't like the, you know, that quick log line, I think it's kind of necessary when you're talking to people that maybe want to read it, what are you working on, potential publishers, just to throw out something that you're familiar with, and you go, oh yeah, I see that. You know, just it very quickly gets that point across of what the general story is, what the general plot might be.
Okay. Yeah, cool. Is it hard work to do?
It was definitely a learning process to learn how to write comics. I don't know what your audience is made up of as far as, you know, fans or readers or people that are creating, but I know you guys have background in writing. It's a different language, you know, when you think about how many panels to fit in a page, how to make page turns, and abstractly, I went thinking, oh yeah, it's comics. I've read comics since I was, I don't know, 5, and I certainly know what a comic does. And then you get into it and you realize how the beats have to happen and how page breaks should happen. And it's a little bit of a learning curve. I actually joined an online community called Comics Experience, which was founded by Andy Schmidt, a former Marvel and IDW editor who had taught classes in person in New York when he was at Marvel, had taught comics writing. And I think it might have just been comics writing at the time. But, you know, 5-6 week course, very focused on getting you, you're going to come out with having written pages and kind of get you on your way. And part of what he offers in addition to the classes is something called the Comics Experience Workshop, where it's other people that are at different stages of their careers, different walks of life, all trying to do comics. So it was this great online community to find and get together with people that they'll give you very constructive criticism. There's nobody has a bad attitude. You know, it's just people trying to elevate the work. They see what you're trying to do, and they speak to the work. It's not a lot of, you know what I would do, but it's, okay, well, I see what you're going for here, but maybe this doesn't work. Is there a different way you could make this point? Or, hey, guys, I've got a question about marketing, or who's a good print-on-demand service? It's a really great resource. So it's still not something that's totally second nature, but I think I have a better understanding on how the structure works.
Okay. So what's this money going to go on, then, if you can raise the full amount?
If we get to the full amount, it's going to go to production of the book. So that just covers expenses in printing. That covers shipping. There are some T-shirts that are in the mix. There's a little bit of different editions of the books, and it just goes to cover the production costs of making it.
Okay. Do you think you can make that amount?
Do I think I can make it? Looking at Kickstarters going into this, I knew that there was going to be a dead period, and I knew that that period would be the period we're in now. I'm not sure when you guys are going to post this, but right now we're at, I believe, 32%, 33%, and we have 8 days left. We have till next Friday the 14th in the afternoon, Eastern Standard Time in the afternoon, and I don't know. I went into this with the attitude of whatever happens, happens, and I'm thrilled with what's happened so far. I would love for the dollar amount to hit, but you know, realistically, I'm an unknown creator. I've not really written comics before. I've got a couple things that I've done, but I'm not a name. I don't have a large social network. I knew there were certain hurdles that I would have to overcome going into it. So realistically, it was always, you know, failure was always a chance, but it was also a project that I wanted to try to get out of my system, if that makes sense.
You know, yeah, certainly.
Do it and try it, and to make it happen, there were just frankly costs that I wasn't able to cover out of pocket.
At least you remain positive about the whole experience.
To be honest, though, you did quite well. I mean, 82 backers. That's definitely one of the highest amount of backers I've seen in a Kickstarter project. Like, isn't like earning £200,000?
Yeah.
Et cetera, et cetera.
You know, it's 4 issues. I think people recognize that it's. I hope they think it's not a bad deal. You know, for $10 you get the comics digitally. For $20 you get print and digital. So I like to think that that's at least a pretty good value. We're not trying to raise the full amount just to produce an issue. You're going to get 4 issues, complete story, and that's it. And I do feel, like you said, it's hard not to be positive. It's been overwhelmingly surprising. Like, I went in optimistically. I only had about 12 minutes of, oh, this is a terrible idea. Why are you doing this? And that was launch. And I just had that moment of, this is, what are you doing? But it's been so great to meet people, you know, over the internet, talk to people that I've known for years that, You talk about doing it. I talked for a year about doing a Kickstarter, or however long I talked about doing it and hadn't gotten there yet. And now it's it's a reality, and we'll see what happens. And the experience really has been worth it.
Yeah, it is very good that you're keeping positive on top of this. I mean, that's the right attitude to have, really, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
What about you, Andy? Did you have any questions?
No, you seem to answered most of my questions. Most of my questions relate to plot of the book, which we can't actually state in here.
You can't do too much into the plot of the book, no. Can you, obviously.
You
have to give it all away.
If you want to know the plot of the book, you're going to have to put some money in. Dig deep, Andrew.
Dig deep.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully we'll get it made and we'll have it around. You know, we'll have inventory and people will be able to get it digitally. And that's the nice thing about creator-owned, is you decide where you want to put it and how you want to make it available.
Yeah, there's no dictation over it, is there? There's no, you can't have it here or have it. So, yep, I'll just hand it out to whoever. There you go. Yeah. Have a copy.
Yeah, it's super fulfilling. Even just, I had printed out the couple of stories that have been produced so far and had that to show publishers and to show people. and just to get the reaction of, you know, this is a viable thing. I can see this being a book that is publishable. That's pretty validating to get it to that point where somebody's going, I think I could see this as a thing. And, you know, it's a process. You work through like any other process, any other trying to put something together. And if you have listeners who are thinking about doing comics, you know, that's been my biggest regret, is not doing it sooner in some capacity, is not trying to do more.
That's very good advice. I feel exactly the same way. Why haven't we been doing this all along, kind of thing? Yeah,
there's a guy that I like his writing a lot, named Merlin Mann. He started off as kind of a getting things done was sort of where he came from as far as productivity. He's a productivity guy, and he's since kind of changed focus to trying to make sure you get the most out of your creative life. And one of the examples I remember him saying is, you know, this you're not going to get hurt by it. Just talking about whatever the thing that you're fearing is, or that you're, I should do that someday. If it's not life-threatening, maybe you should do it now, because what's the worst that's going to happen?
That definitely hurts my wallet. I think that's about as bad as it gets, though.
Yeah, that's bad.
All worth it, though. All worth it, I think.
You've got to find the collaborators who are able to throw in. I'm actually working with a couple of friends of mine are the primary creators on a comic called Space Core, and that's actually free online right now. It's spacecorecomic.com.
Yeah, I did check that out. You've got a link on it to on your Kickstarter, haven't you?
Yeah, they do. I mean, this is all blood, sweat, and tears. They're just putting it out there, and in a couple of months when they have something that would be enough to fill a trade, you know, the first story arc, they're going to see if they can put out a trade. And it's just willing it into existence like so much other stuff.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's just trying to get your stuff out there, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the good thing about the internet, is it's a free medium. Anyone can leave advice or comments or hate. There's a lot of hate out there. You got to see through that, haven't you?
No, it's the silent majority on the internet. The majority of the people on the internet are not hate-filled people. They're rather calm.
Yeah.
Unless you go to be. Don't go to be, listeners. Never go to be.
Never. But I do think that you can get your work out there.
No,
I've said this before at the beginning of the podcast. If it's good enough, hopefully they'll come. If you build it.
Also, a big part of it is there may not be a market for it. I think, if anything, that if this doesn't succeed, I'm going to say that it falls on not doing a great job of marketing it. Because I do think when people see it, they have a decent reaction. So,
I can't imagine someone looking at this and going, "Yeah, I don't want to put some money into this."
Same.
It looks great. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, thanks. But I do get that, you know, it's not for everybody. It might not be your thing, and there's plenty of other independent stuff to support. Oh, gosh. I don't know if you guys have read Chew by John Guillory.
No.
Published through Image, and I realized I got to issue 30 is out. I got to the last page of that, which I'd seen some people posting at different places on Twitter and Facebook about, oh, my God, Chew number 30. And I thought, whatever. I like Chew. I always look forward to it. I always, you know, that's the top of my stack. And I read it and realized how emotionally invested I was in this comic and what had happened. You know, that's the great things that comics do, is you're not with it for a month or two, and you're like, I like Chew a lot. It's a great comic, but man, and then you get into it and go, oh my God, I can't believe they did this. They're tearing my heart out. That you get. Something that's printed paper. It's a different relationship than you can have with other media for a lot of reasons.
No, it really is. I completely agree with that.
Well, comic book characters age as you age. That makes any sense?
I think it's more. It's something to look forward to. With like a film and stuff, you get that once. With TV series, yeah, you can see more of that. With a TV series, because it's continuously coming to you. But with a comic, it's like, usually, it's like one a month. Look forward to it, you're getting home, it's on your doorstep, or you've gone to the comic shop to buy it, whatever. Yeah. And it's just like, yeah, you get to read the story, and then it's always a cut off, and you've got to wait to the next issue to find out what happens. That's great.
Oh yeah.
It's fantastic.
Yep.
Okay.
Just I don't know, sorry. It was just silence. Cause it was a good point. It was a point that needed...
Yeah, we needed people silence. To reflect on that for a little bit.
We did. We all needed to reflect on it a little bit.
Right, well, I don't want to keep you too much longer than Jerry. I think I'll end the podcast there.
I appreciate it so much. It was a lot of fun. I'm glad to have a chance to talk with you guys. Thanks for reaching out.
Yeah, no worries.
No worries, man.
Same to you, man. It's always fun speaking to new people and their stuff they're doing. I always find it so fascinating.
Oh, yeah.
Just, I'm overwhelmed by what people are out there doing and stuff.
When you get into it and you realize how many other people are doing it, then it comes from a place of love and passion about, I'm going to make comics. And whatever they're doing, you know, it's great. It energizes you to see people doing their own work and what kind of work it is.
Yeah, definitely. I completely agree with that. Anyway, is there a Twitter or anything you want to plug up some links?
Sure. You can. I'm at Joey G on Twitter. I should have, in retrospect, tried to see if I could have gotten just my first name. I feel like I was early to Twitter, which I'm usually late to everything. It was relatively new, and I actually share, apparently there's a New York-based rapper. I get tweets meant for him. He is Joey G, and I never comment because he's very angry, or was very angry, that I had his Twitter handle, or what he thought was his Twitter handle.
Like that. Then when you go to like a new system and stuff, and you've got to, like, what, my gamer name or something's been like this for so many years, and you're trying to get it, someone's, no, they're taking it, Yeah, that's terrible.
My gamer tag has been the same gamer tag for like
nice.
10 years, but no.
Mine's always been.
I've never had to worry about it.
Mine's always been Eraser, just Eraser. There's no like numbers or anything because I didn't need it. I was really early to the phase.
Yeah.
When I find something new about to kick off, like 9 times out of 10, I'll make up a username and just put it on there just in case. Like if someone says, "Yeah, this new site's quite good. Have you ever seen that?" Or like, "There's a new." Like, you know, remember when OnLive came out? I'm not sure if everyone here knows what OnLive is. It's cloud gaming.
Oh, cloud gaming. Yeah. I know it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I put my username on that. And now my username's just Eraser as well.
Alright.
Yeah. Any other links? Just to Twitter, at Joey G.
If people are interested in the comic, it's dryseasonscomic.com.
And you can also find that on Kickstarter. If you search for Dry Seasons, it's the first thing that pops up.
Yeah, so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
No problem, dude.
You can follow me on Twitter, at CarlCanBlog. I'll be tweeting about this shortly. And you can't follow Andrew because he's not into the Twitter phase.
No.
He's not up with technology.
You're not down with the kids.
Oh, God, you actually did the motion as well.
I did.
That was so sad. You actually did the, what's it called? Like the West Side thingy. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're hip.
Yeah, I'm hip, yeah.
With the kids, as it were.
Yeah, I'm down with the kids.
Yeah. You did it again.
Because you have to do it when you're saying it.
Yeah,
I'm saying that phrase.
Got all the actions with it. So, yeah, so I think that's the end of the podcast then.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that's how we end. Excelsior.
Excelsior.
Well, I'll stop it there then. Once again, pleasure having you on. To listeners, please go and donate to this comic. You look at it once, you'll donate.
Yeah.
A guarantee. Okay.
It's my guarantee.
Thanks for checking it out.
No worries. All right. I'll see you later.
Appreciate it, guys.
Nice talking to you, Joey.
Thanks for listening to the Fortune Geek Heroes podcast. There will be another one next Monday. In the meantime, though, you can always follow me on Twitter, at CarlCanBlog. That is at CarlCanBlog, all one word, of course. And
And you can also follow Andrew Knows on Twitter, at Andrew Slacker. And please, please donate to the Kickstarter project. It's great, it's awesome. Just go to Kickstarter and type in Dry Seasons. It'll come straight up. Donate. And yeah, thanks for listening. Bye.